Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thank you for listening to the Late Breaking F1 Podcast. Make sure to check out new episodes every Wednesday and every Sunday. Hello and a very warm welcome to the Late Breaking F1 Podcast presented by Harry Eade, Sam Sage and me, Ben Hocking, as we have two sessions to review today, the sprint race that happened earlier on and the qualifying that, as we're recording, has just happened in Miami. Sam, we need to make sure we do this in the correct order.
Yes, just so you know the difference between the two of them, in one of them, Kevin Magnussen was the biggest menace you've ever seen, and in the other one, he basically didn't feature. So that's how we're going to talk about them.
Yeah. Oh. Good stuff.
Oh, hi.
Hey, guys.
Folks, you know, we did the sprint shootout review, and Harry wasn't here. Harry, yeah. Do you want to tell him why you weren't here?
There may have been a slight possibility, and it's a very slim possibility that I was asleep, and then
where did you fall asleep, Harry?
On the sofa.
Good.
The F1 was on, and it's not because it was boring. I was just very tired, and then I woke up, and everything had finished, including
the night time.
What time did you wake up?
I did. I woke up in the night, but you guys had already finished doing the podcast, and then I was like, well, I'll explain this in the morning to them because they won't believe me now.
For reference, we finished the podcast at about midnight. Was when we came offline. So good stuff from Harry there. Glad to have you.
But you'll be pleased to know, folks, I am awake.
I just thought it might be a protest against sprints generally, against sprint quality.
I'm not reviewing that rubbish.
Nah, ain't got time for that. We've got two sessions to review, of course, though. We will go in chronological order. We'll start with the sprint that happened earlier today. And as we rarely do on these episodes, we're going to start at the start. We're actually going to look at turn one, lap one, to kick us off, because a lot of action happened there. Two retirements, Lance Stroll and Lando Norris, not seeing the end of the first lap. Fernando Alonso, essentially no longer a factor in the race. The only person involved in the incidents, plural, I guess you could say, is Lewis Hamilton. But he ended up not getting any points either due to a pit lane infringement. Sam, how did you view the first corner?
Bit messy. Bit of a spillage went on there, wasn't there? It was scrappy. Poor Lando absolutely flummoxed himself around the outside and found himself caught up in something that he wanted nothing to do with. No bit. No, thank you. Not today. I'm not interested. Bam. Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am. No tyres for you, sir. This is a classic case of if you get your qualifying lap in, you don't get caught up in the midfield drama, and he would have been well out of the way if he'd actually got that. What I feel like could have been at least a top four, arguably should have been a front row start for that McLaren in the sprint shootout. Didn't get it, ends up starting much further back, caught up in the drama.
As well.
Yeah, right. So, you know, you get that lapping, you're not near any of that kind of midfield calamity that's going on. Equally, though, he was not at fault for anything. Now, a lot of people try to blame this solely on Lewis Hamilton. Now, we've got some proper British bias on this podcast, of course. You know, us always so biased. But I do feel like Lewis Hamilton was separate from the initial incident. And I do think that it was, you know, Alonso was trying to pinch Lance Stroll. Lance Stroll was actually the one that caused the, just a little pinchy. Oh, pinchy. Simpsons Lewis reference comes in there. Takes out Lance. And then I love that Lewis Hamilton just goes, I saw a gap and I went for it. really channeling his hero there that was Ayrton Senna. You have got to slow down a bit for turn one, Lewis. And I do believe that he's at fault for hitting, I think it was Alonso on the outside of him there. But I don't think that Hamilton has got anything to do with the actual taking out of Norris. I do think that's on Stroll. I think Alonso and Norris are kind of innocent bystanders in this and kind of just got hit by their respective partners on the insides of themselves. So Stroll, I think, is at fault for Norris. He was a little bit sandwiched, but I do think he was at fault. Hamilton is at fault for hitting Alonso. And I do think that those things are a bit separate. But yeah, really mucky for the start of the Grand Prix. Also, no red flag. Why couldn't we have had one? I need three. I've got one session left to happening. They've let me down there. Quite disappointed.
Harry, how did you view it if you were awake?
I was awake for this one. I do think Lewis Hamilton may have just started braking for turn one now.
I think you're lying. I don't think he has.
No, look, it was a messy turn one, and I agree with you, Sam. It wasn't solely on Lewis Hamilton this one, because as you say, Alonso and Stroll were connecting before Hamilton rocked up. I do think Hamilton was the cause of Norris being punted off, though. I think as messy as it was becoming between Alonso and Stroll, I think they all three of them probably, and this is where it's quite a marginal thing to call. Probably were going to make it through the corner. I mean, it might have been a bit of rubbing and racing, but I think would have made it through. But then obviously Hamilton came along and was like, no guys, not today. And then chaos ensued. So yeah, given where the stewarding is, I'm surprised there was no investigation at all, nothing, or at least no penalties given out. Because it was chaotic. And I know they have this view that lap one's a bit different, but there are at least a couple of... I think Alonso probably went in slightly too hot. Hamilton was in there way too hot, which is surprising given the experience both of those drivers have. Again, I'd go back to sprint races. I don't think they'd give a flying monkeys about
Alonso
it.
Alonso does not care. He's like, turn one, let's have some chaos.
But to be honest, and I back that for Alonso. I think Hamilton was the same attitude for this race, because we'll go on to what happened later on. But he was just like you say, that radio message was... I saw a gap. I went for it. I was like, you saw a gap, Lewis? Like, the gap was 20 miles in front of you.
The gap's a coater, mate.
Exactly. But yeah, so that was quite funny given their experience that they were the two really causing that sort of carnage there. But yeah, a messy one. Quite surprised there was no penalties at all given out. And yeah, Norris, admittedly, he shouldn't have been that far down, but he did. He left all the space. All the space.
More than he needed to.
Yeah. Way too much, to be honest, and still got taken out. So it was a harsh one on him.
If I ever get in trouble with the law, I'm going to ask Lewis Hamilton to be my defense attorney, because I do not understand how he's managed to get away with this.
I saw a crime being committed, so I dig it.
How has he avoided a penalty? He's just flown up the inside. And honestly, I think the Alonso Stroll contact, you can see on board Alonso as he's coming up to the first corner, he looks in his mirror twice. And I do believe that Lewis Hamilton has a part to play in the contact that Alonso and Stroll has, because Fernando Alonso can see him coming. Like, you can see based on what he's doing with his mirrors, he can see Lewis Hamilton flying up the inside of him. At which point, Fernando Alonso's kind of in a, what do I do scenario? Do I turn in and know that Hamilton's going to hit me, or do I at least try and avoid that but potentially have contact with my teammate? I don't think there's much Fernando Alonso could have done about it. So I think Lewis Hamilton was the first domino in everything that happened there. And look, him not getting a penalty is one thing. As you've already said, not being investigated? I thought I was mishearing. And to be fair to the commentary team, at least in the UK, they were a bit flabbergasted by this as well. I just don't understand. It seemed fairly, I don't know. I didn't have to think much about it. It was like, okay, yes, he's gone in there at 100 miles an hour and just hit two cars. I think that's a penalty. Might be a bit controversial. So I don't know how he escaped it. I thought that was 100% on him.
I in my mind, I mentally view it now as one of those scenes where someone is kind of standing on the cliff edge and someone runs into them but manages to stop right before they go over the edge. And then someone else runs into the back of them and they're all kind of like, whoa, thank God we didn't fall over the edge. We're just, Hamilton just comes in. Dun, dun, bang! And they all fly. Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of like, well, we all managed to survive it and then that guy turned up.
And Fernando Alonso's statement after the race was that Hamilton would have got a penalty if he was Spanish.
Oh my God.
That's so Fernando.
Those two are still playing their games, honestly. Go on, say it's about being Spanish. Go on.
Lewis, mate, I dare you. Do a real reckless turn one and then don't get a penalty and I'll say it's because you're not Spanish. Yeah,
I just can't wait for Lewis to turn up wearing like a sombrero or something and being like, hola, Alonso. Now who's Spanish? That's the next move.
I mean, the actual, to move away from turn one, the rest of the sprint race, at least out front, was fairly pedestrian, but the real action happened lower down, at least in terms of the last point available, eighth place. Lewis Hamilton's action field day wasn't over, as he and Kevin Magnussen were embroiled in a right little battle over that eighth place. Sam, what do you make of the battle that they had and the, and I'm not lying on this, 35 seconds worth of penalties that Magnussen was able to accumulate?
I'm not sure it was a battle, more kind of a war that started to go on between the two of them. Kevin Magnussen, we've seen it time and time again at this point. Once he's out the points and a penalty is on the cards, the man just does not give a flip. He has got, you know, he's like, bring it on, mother flippers. I'm holding you all back. Don't let him through. Don't let him through. He's literally K-Mag, you know, holding out the waves of cars behind him while Hülkenberg drives off into the distance. And I kind of respect on one level his reckless level of abandonment when it comes to sacrificing himself and all safety and anyone else to make sure that Haas get a point. Kind of has a weird honour to it and I respect it. At the same time, man, you've got to race to some degree of sensible sportsmanlike behaviour. You just take a break for the heavy turns into what, turn eight or nine that it is. You just didn't stop the car. Lewis Hamilton's like, oh, I'm going to have to just turn it right on a left-hander, otherwise I'm not making it into that corner. Yeah, the red mist came down. He cut corners again. How many penalties has he got now over the last four or five races? About 50 seconds, I think it is. It's hilarity. And they're having to tell him off now, aren't they, for being quite unsportsmanlike. He's been called in again for being a very naughty boy because that behaviour was funny. Fun, yes. Bit too far. Also, yes.
Yeah, I think that now puts him on 8 of the 12 points that you need for a one race ban. Harry, what did you make of Magnussen's behaviour?
Lot of banter.
Box office.
Have you seen the interview he's done with Sky after the sprint race?
Yes.
Yeah. Where he said, they said, Natalie Pinkham interviewing him said, you've got these penalties, what they deserve. And he's like, Yeah. They're done.
I haven't seen it.
It's so good. I was watching it. I was shocked. I was like, "All right, he's just saying I'm guilty."
He knows he's an ass, but he's done it for the right reasons.
But the thing is, for the team, the right reason. And his argument is in the interview. He's saying, "While it was working right, I had a good start. I was up to eighth. Nico Hülkenberg was in front of me. I was hanging his DRS. Then Hülkenberg makes a mistake and cuts that chicane in the twiddly bit and actually gains time on him. So Magnussen falls out the DRS. And his argument then goes on to say, and so then I started defending like that for the team. At no point does he say, the team asked me to. He was just like, well, I've got no choice now. I must
sacrifice myself.
Yeah, exactly. He's just like, I must be.
But it's
ass.
A no-brainer, right? Like, what else is he going to fight for? Like, you might as well.
Oh God!
I understand it, but the way he seems quite furious in the interview, and he makes it sound like he's like, oh well, I did this for the team, like as if the team asked him to, but they didn't. He was just like, well, I've got no other option now, so I must sacrifice
Murder.
Myself.
Murder is the next logical step for me. Now I cannot score a race point.
I mean, Ben, you said this in our group chat. You said a sprint race would be much better if it was just 20 clones of Kevin Magnussen, and quite frankly, it would be. Because that's all we watched all race. And he was, I don't agree. I think he was beyond the limit on that one. But I do feel like we miss that sort of, not that far, but the sort of hard racing aspect of Formula One is slightly lost because drivers are so afraid of getting penalties. And thank God for Kevin Magnussen, who apparently isn't afraid of just getting penalties and will do it anyway. As Felix Rosenquist has said, he just likes a good old fight. Doesn't want fastest laps, race wins, points. Just wants a good old scrap in the midfield. And that is Kevin Magnussen.
It's like your dad at the end of dinner time. He's on, you got finishing that. I love that. You got like, don't want that penalty. I'll have that. Yeah,
I love that one.
Got a mouthful left over there, have you? Pass, you know who wants it. Yeah. Daddy K-Mag. I'll take it. Thank you very much. It's like a minute penalty score. I feel full now. I feel satisfied.
I really enjoyed. So the first, when it started to kick off with Hamilton, Hamilton goes up the inside of him and we're on that onboard camera, but it's to the left of Hamilton. So you can't really see what's happening to K-Mag.
Yeah.
And they go through the corner and I literally said, I was like, Mags is still going to be there. And at that point, there's like a bump and Mags comes straight through. I'm like, of course he did.
There he is.
There he is. It was, look, entertaining. It was beyond the line of what was acceptable. But quite frankly, it's worth it. But we said box office didn't really happen much this last year. He's making up for it. He is back.
So I need to word this correctly, but I have no problem with the way that Kevin Magnussen went about today in that as soon as he got that first penalty for cutting the chicane, which a 10-second penalty, I thought was a little bit harsh for that.
Bit savage.
But anyway, he got the 10-second penalty for doing that and keeping the position ahead of Lewis Hamilton. And like you say, at that point, he's already lost DRS. Why wouldn't he approach the rest of the race the way that he did? Like there's no reason for him not to, apart from the accumulation of penalty points. The time penalties mean nothing to him at that stage. He knows as soon as he gets that 10-second penalty and he's got like six cars directly behind him, he's not getting any points. So at that point, he might as well retire if he's not going to be there to essentially hold up everyone else so Hülkenberg can race off into the distance. And I've got no problem because everything he did bad after that point was penalised, right? So the stewards did their job. They gave penalties accordingly. But this is almost, it's a bit of a symptom. I know we've sort of discussed this before. It's a little bit of a symptom of the way that penalties in F1 are. So if we're using like IndyCar as a sort of comparison point here, if it was IndyCar and he did any of those things, he's probably either getting a drive-through or being told to get back to the back of the field, at which point like he can't defend anymore, right? But because of these time penalties that were always given out, either 5 or 10 seconds, there's no incentive for Magnussen to do anything else other than just, okay, I'll take him at the end of the race. I'm not going to get any points and I'll help my team out. Like, it's just common sense, right? And as you've already referenced, Harry then had the interview afterwards and he was very honest and said, yeah, I deserved all those penalties. But until anything changes in terms of the way penalties are given out, I struggle to blame him for the way that he went about the race. Everything was penalised and it still made sense for him to do it. So crack on.
I think the other thing that's so annoying about that situation is he was penalised, as you've, I think, both rightly said, harsh for 10 seconds for cutting that little chicane. He didn't really gain massively. Lewis Hamilton commits potentially, you know, fly-by murder on turn one, as we're debating. Nothing. Okay. Fernando Alonso having a wheel-to-wheel battle in China, nudges another car going wheel-to-wheel around the corner. Okay, there's a little bit of contact, but 3 penalty points, 10-second penalty. Like, where are we with what is a penalty and what isn't? Lewis Hamilton speeding in the pit lane under safety car, drive-through. Like, what?
Which turned into a 20-second time penalty. That's only 15 seconds less than what Magnussen got for the sprint.
What is bad? What is good? What is the consistency? I can drive into someone and get severe damage and I've got less of a time penalty than I have for cutting a chicane where I'm still just in front of the car I was already in front of anyway. I don't know what's bad now.
Oh, you know who's got it right? Not Hamilton, not Magnussen. Esteban Ocon's got this right. Get your penalty before the race, then you can take it under a safety car.
Oh my goodness.
Man, say 3D chess.
Le plan.
Is that like, you know what, guys? I know there's going to be a safety car.
Yeah.
I'll take it then.
He knows it.
He can see the future and he saw that Alonso was going to be involved in a lap one incident and would be at the back with him so they could just fight together for 19 laps.
It's like
what he wanted.
Rematch. We go again.
that's all they nothing. Did. You watch the timing tower. They're just swapping the whole time.
Yeah. Who's defending like a lion now, Fernando?
You let that Aston Martin know. I'm going to overtake him. Who was your driver of that session, Sam, before we go to break?
Of the sprint?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to Daniel Ricciardo, who did a great job of passing Perez at the start, holds on to fourth, defends brilliantly against Sainz, and that was the best thing he's done all season and the best thing he's done all weekend, and it's going to quickly come tumbling down after the advert break.
Harry?
Yeah, Danny Rick was driver of the sprint for me, I think. Again, we'll come on to quality, but it felt like that Danny Rick of old watching him today. I know he was doing a lot of defending and not like the classic overtaking he used to do, but it was a very measured drive, and I think he defended from the Ferrari, which is easily a quicker car, and obviously the McLaren of Piastri as well, defended that very, very intelligently.
Yep. Daniel Ricciardo for me, superb effort. Deserves a lot of respect for what he did. Shout outs as well to Pierre Gasly and Logan Sargeant, who, if this was an actual race, would have scored their team's first points of the season, but instead 9th and 10th gets you nothing in a sprint, boys. Sorry about that.
That was me rubbing my hands together thinking that Gasly might snatch away teammate wars for me.
No.
Ocon's got it in the bag, don't you worry.
That was the highest position finishing by an Alpine anyway, so he is technically leading.
It doesn't matter though, does it?
Nah.
No, still don't matter.
We'll take our break at this point. On the other side, we'll review the qualifying session.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, so after a Max Verstappen win and a Charles Leclerc second in the sprint, there was a bit of a shake-up in qualifying as Max Verstappen finished on pole and Charles Leclerc was second. couple of Ferraris, though. Carlos Sainz did a better job than he did in the sprint qualifying as he'll be third starting tomorrow. So a Ferrari 2-3. Charles Leclerc was fairly close to Max Verstappen in the sprint itself, Sam. Is there any chance that Leclerc and Sainz can team up strategically to at least give Verstappen a headache?
Before we get onto the analysis, I have to laugh because with our dry humour, I do wonder if anyone ever comes onto the show and thinks, what does he mean there's been a shake-up? They're exactly
the same order.
Yeah, what a moron. What is this podcast going that is actually a joke? And I do wonder if anyone sits there and goes,
it's a valid point.
Can I just say, interrupt this with that also humour, poor humour. As I went out for the last Q3 runs, Crofty said, the Lando's gone soft now. And I
knew one of you was going to laugh at that.
I actually didn't.
Sorry. Anyway, carry on.
I was too fed up of his parish notice board references that were going on for the entire session. Good God. We're going to scream. So, okay, we've got a Ferrari 2-3. Perez is in fourth. Verstappen is in first. Yes, in theory, there's every chance that those Ferraris could do a bit of a double whammy over Verstappen and try and kind of out-strategize them. And the timings were a lot closer than I expected. Leclerc being less than 0.2 away from pole. I think it was 0.113 or something like that he was away from pole position, which is promising. The issue is the sprint shootout that we had was equally quite close and there was no catching in sight. Even though you've got Verstappen complaining about failed tyre grip, the car is struggling. He even had a clutch problem at one point in qualifying itself. That Red Bull is clearly not 100% happy here at Miami. Leclerc just couldn't get any closer. And even though Perez was stuck behind Ricciardo for a while and playing a bit of a bizarre game in the sprint race, he was even closing down Leclerc massively come the end of the Grand Prix. So whilst I'd love to think that Ferrari could strategically do something against Verstappen and maybe take the win, one, it's Ferrari. Let's not get a lot of hope and faith into the fact that they might do something strategically brilliant. Let's not get our hopes up here because a normal race is good for them. Two, I think Verstappen still got this in the bag. It still seems quite difficult to overtake around this Miami circuit. That Red Bull is potent. And I do think if Perez is on his A game. I think he could clear Sainz off the line, and I think he's got Leclerc right in front of him to attack. I do see this falling towards Red Bull. I'd love to see it, but I still think Red Bull are favourites, possibly for a 1-2 finish.
What do you think, Harry?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, the sprint often gives us a snapshot of what the race will be like. And Verstappen didn't run away with it this morning, depending on where you're watching it.
Just over 3 seconds.
Yeah, 3 seconds, which, again, celebrating those small wins. He only won by 3 seconds. Great.
It was a small win.
It was a small win. But you compare that to the likes of China, for example. It's definitely a small win. So, I don't know. But Ferrari seemed like they also were struggling. That was as much as Leclerc had. And he could keep up. But it just seems like Verstappen could still edge out a bit of a gap over as the laps continued. So it's encouraging. And clearly Verstappen's sort of making the difference versus what Perez can do, because Perez is being outdone by the, or was in qualifying, but outdone by the two Ferraris and obviously Leclerc in the sprint. So they're in the game, Ferrari, which, you know, what we have had this season, it's kind of the best we can hope for at this point, I think, for a tight battle. So if they can give Verstappen a headache tomorrow, if it's 2 versus 1 in that sense, I know Perez will be behind, but if they can, then maybe there is something that can be done. But even with Jenson Button said this after on the Sky commentary after the sprint race, even the guy that won the sprint race was complaining, that's pretty demoralizing for literally everyone else, because you've still won, Max, and you think your car's terrible. So that's, what about everyone else? I don't know. We'll see how it goes tomorrow. I'm not massively confident that Ferrari can actually beat him, but they might give him they'll give him something to think about.
Yeah. This is going to sound, it's not going to sound like a compliment, but it really is. Max Verstappen, like, when was the last time he was driving as scrappily as he is and still winning? Like, I don't know. He doesn't seem very in control, but as you say, Harry, that's not very encouraging for the rest of the field, because it's still enough. Don't take this the wrong idea, people, the wrong way, people, because Verstappen is the heavy, heavy favourite tomorrow. I do think Ferrari, there is a route for them to give Verstappen a headache. And again, I'm not out here saying Ferrari 1-2 tomorrow, grazie ragazzi, that's going to happen. But I think given where they're starting, if they can claim 2-3, you know, that's where they are on the grid, if they can stay that way through the first few laps, if they can split their strategies and, you know, one car pits at the same time as Verstappen, but the other one goes longer, if that other car goes longer and can take advantage of a safety car to the point where they are out in front, could that cause them a bit of trouble? I think it could, because whilst I think Verstappen has enough pace to comfortably win when he's out front, as really happened in the sprint, you know, it was a 3-second win, but he was never really under threat by Leclerc. If it was the other way round, and let's say Leclerc was leading Verstappen halfway through the Grand Prix, do I think Verstappen would have the outright pace to overtake Charles Leclerc? I don't know. I'm unconvinced based on what I've seen so far. No, it's not like we've already referenced China, right? The China sprint, he walked away with that after a couple of laps and he just extended and extended. Miami, it was around 2 to 3 seconds for pretty much the entire sprint. Perez didn't really make much of an impression on Leclerc. I think race pace-wise, it might be quite similar. So if it's a standard race, I think Verstappen will walk it. But if there is something odd that happens and Ferrari can maybe split strategies, I don't think it will be a walk in the park for Verstappen. I am looking forward to Verstappen winning by 40 seconds, by the way.
Yeah. That's definitely going to happen now. And complaining the whole way.
Oh, just, yeah.
Yeah. GP's absolutely furious on the pit wall because shut up, Max. You're still winning.
Grip is awful, purple sector.
Oh, like today in qualifying, the clutch doesn't sound good, GP. Yeah, the clutch is fine. Get on with it.
What did you make, Harry, of the medium tyre being used by Lando Norris and the two Mercedes as well in their second run in Q3? It's a bit of a rarity that we see anything other than the soft run in sort of the dying stages of qualifying, but we've seen it here. What do you think?
Yeah, it was a strange one. Obviously, Norris yesterday, I understand the McLaren one with Norris running it in Q2. Because they obviously yesterday in SQ2, it worked well for them and they did a quicker time than he managed on the soft tire. I get why they gave it another go at the end of SQ2. It was like a test from what Norris did in Q2 on that medium tire. Don't know what evidence they saw that made them run it again at the beginning of Q3, to be honest. But fair enough. They thought maybe we'll give it one more go and then they can revert to the soft tire. Didn't cause them any harm. Mercedes running it on their last runs is utterly, utterly baffling. What are you doing? Like, what? Show me the evidence. They're just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks because they've got no idea what's working. Hamilton did a great lap at the end of Q2 and the things looked up and did perhaps maybe the worst lap he's ever done in the world. Good in Lord. The beginning of Q3. I'm not hating on Hamilton. It's just the car and drivers were struggling from run to run, but that was absolutely horrendous to watch. Like the car didn't want to turn into any corner. So Mercedes think, yeah, we'll put on the medium tire. Sure. But again, just show me the evidence. And they pointed out in commentary that, the Mercedes on the medium tire in SQ2 in sprint qualifying, they couldn't get through to the last part of the session. So why would it be better? Why would this be better? So the Norris one I can forgive. Like they gave it a go. They had enough pace in the car. The Mercedes one I find utterly bizarre, but whatever. They're just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks. And if it doesn't, well, we'll give it another go. Hamilton said on the radio, he wasn't really sure why his run was so good in Q2. And that just summarizes where Mercedes are. They've got not a Scooby-Doo about what's good about that car or what's bad about it.
Well, they're bad through high-speed corners, apart from, no, that's now their strength. Okay, Mercedes, sure. What do you think, Sam? Medium tyres used by the two Mercs and Lando?
Yeah, Harry, your analogy of throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks is correct, apart from they didn't stick. So instead of going to get something new, they walked back to the wall and scooped it up off the floor again.
Throw it again.
And they went, oh, if we throw it again, will it stick this time? No, that's not how it works. You know, try it once. Okay, I've made a mistake. Try it twice. You're a bloody fool. You knew how bad it was in SQ2. Both cars out. The conditions are almost identical between the two sessions. And you go, Lando Norris is really good on the mediums. Okay, cool. That's moment A. Data A. We were really bad on the mediums. Data B. Maybe now we'll be really good on the mediums. What evidence are you using to make that decision? And I think these two sessions have summarized Mercedes' journey in this new regulations perfectly. They've gone, okay, this hasn't worked for us. Okay, let's look what everyone else is doing. Oh, that thing works for them. Let's just try something similar to that. This thing also isn't still working for us, and we still don't understand why this isn't working for us, and we didn't go anywhere near the thing that maybe kind of did work for us. They ain't got a Scooby. They don't know what they're doing, and I imagine that when they crossed the line in, what, 7th and 8th again at the end of Q3, they all slapped their thighs and went, oh, fiddlesticks. We were so close to progressing. That was we were onto something there. No, you weren't. You are literally riding high on your two drivers being excellent, and that car is an absolute bag of dog poo that you found down the road. Honestly, sort it out. What a joke of a decision. Who's making these calls? Me? Me? It may as well be me, because that's how idiotic they are.
Sam, if Toto Wolff was slapping his thighs and saying fiddlesticks, how would it sound?
Ah, fiddlesticks.
Wasn't close enough to the mute button.
You know what, Harry? It was a very sensible show yesterday.
Yeah, I don't think there was one Toto Wolff impression. Incredibly dull. First thing I want to say about Mercedes, you're pretty lucky. Actually, I say you're pretty lucky. It didn't actually impact anything in the end, but George Russell crossed that line with about 2 seconds to spare on that last lap.
Hurry up, Lewis.
Well,
When
I saw them coming out of the pits, I was like, ooh, I don't know about this. This seems a little late. And yeah, Russell, with about 2 seconds to go, managed to start his lap. Maybe not the best way to prepare your lap, but anyway, that happened. The medium tyre decision, I was actually all right with, because Lewis Hamilton's difficult to judge because his, as you've already said, his first lap was so bad that his improvement on the mediums the second time round doesn't really mean anything.
Mate, he could have improved on wets.
Well,
that's
precisely
how bad the lap was.
Precisely. So there's not too much point reading into that. George Russell basically set an identical lap time on the mediums compared to the softs, which in normal Q3 conditions, you'd say, well, if you haven't improved from first run to second run, that's not a great decision because usually you're improving at the end of Q3. But we didn't really see that today. We had Verstappen didn't set his best lap time on the second run. Both Ferraris would have only been about sixth and seventh if they used their second run. They were both well off the pace the second time around. So the fact that George Russell was essentially able to match his lap time on mediums the second time around, I thought was a fairly good result, in which case I don't actually think it would have mattered too much whether they were on the softs or the mediums. So I was okay with the decision. They were just so comfortably fourth. They were so comfortably behind McLaren and Red Bull and Ferrari that I don't think the softs would have got them anywhere. I don't know, but it's better than Friday, I guess, Mercedes.
It feels like, Ben, your analytics wrapped up is the tyres don't matter because the car is crap.
Well, Russell's time was almost, I can't remember what the difference was in his two runs, but I think it was less than a tenth. I think it was maybe about half a tenth or so.
I don't think anyone properly improved, did they? Like, the track had clearly failed to improve it didn't rubber ring as much, the temperature dropped.
I didn't even know if it was the track. I just felt like, watching Leclerc's lap, they as soon as everyone ramps up for a final Q3 run, they hustle their last run. And when they tried to hustle, the tyres were like, not today. Don't think so.
No. I'm out of break, mate.
Yeah.
Not saying anything about this track as like a racetrack, but as a I really like Miami as a qualifying track. I think it really works.
I'm not
racist. Whatever. But qualifying, I really like qualifying around Miami.
Yeah. No, I'm cool with that. I think that's great. But it is anticlimactic when the last run, no one has a go. That is a bit of a letdown.
I think the issue was they had too much of a go. I think they were.
Just said they put, hard. You know, they were, oh gosh, you know what? We're gonna try too hard.
They were going.
I got to have a little bit of dinner actually. So I better get the slap over and done with.
Yeah. I think Sergio Perez might have just improved on the second run, but it was.
Sergio.
Yeah, I don't think there weren't a lot of improvements.
Pat on the back for you, Sergio.
Well done.
You got that George Russell meme where he puts the medal on himself.
On our sprint quali review, we spent some time on both Mercedes being knocked out in Q2. Not a great result. So Aston Martin thought, that looks fun. Let's do that on the actual qualifying. Fernando Alonso starting just 15th. Lance Stroll very nearly getting through to Q3, but ended up qualifying 11th, which means we've had two qualifying sessions in 2 days where Lance Stroll has been the lead Aston Martin driver. Sam, what did you make, Sam, of the Aston Martins?
Hold on, mate. I'm just looking out the window because there's some pigs flying past. Literally, what is going on? What's happened? As Lance Stroll colliding with Daniel Ricciardo and China have been knocked into a new level of driving ability. Is he woken up as a different person? Because he's suddenly all right? And I don't get it. But the car clearly not happy in qualifying spec around Miami. I wonder if it's the heat and the softness of the tyres are just not working well with how the Aston Martin is set up. But this is the first time all season that Alonso doesn't make it into a Q3 appearance, which tells you that something is wrong. He doesn't just make it into a Q3 appearance. He's all the way back down in 15th place, as you said. So this is a big jump. It's not like he's a tenth away or half a tenth away. He's far off the pace. Now, that's worrying because if Lance Stroll is the closest of the Aston Martins in both sessions, and, you know, Lance is Lance, you've got to worry if your big gun Alonso is unable to produce a result out of nothing. And he's let himself down there. I don't know if it's him or if it's just the fact that the car looks like a nightmare to drive. He missed three apexes on his last run. The car felt like it was all over the place. It just, that track, something about it seems to really lack the car gripping to the track. They seem to be sliding all over the place. So really disappointing from Aston.
What do you think, Gary?
Yeah, it was a weird one. They just didn't look... I know they're not quite at the same level they were this time last year, Aston Martin, but this weekend in particular, their cars just not looked hooked up at all. I know Alonso's been out driving it, I think, a bit, so it's exaggerated what the pace of that car is. But it, yeah, even Alonso couldn't do anything with it. Like you say, he couldn't hit an apex if it had smacked him in the face at the end of Q2. It just didn't look hooked up at all. And obviously Stroll was the one that had qualified him kind of quite comfortably in the end. So it was a weird one. Actually, Stroll had done his lap from Q1 or something, or might have actually made it in, because Q1 lap was quicker than his Q2 lap. So there was a chance Stroll could have still snuck into Q3. I mean, obviously not, because Nico Hülkenberg was there, because that's what he does. Just picking up Q3s for fun. But yeah, the Aston Martin just not looking hooked up at all. And I know we joked about Alonso not caring about the sprint, but I think where he ended up at the end of the sprint, I know he was at the back, but you'd expect him to make some progress. He made no progress whatsoever. So yeah, it's going to be a tough day for them tomorrow.
There was a stat there that came out that Lance Stroll, for like maybe 4 or 5 sessions in a row or something, or in the last 7 Grand Prix, hasn't improved on his Q1 time in Q2. It's quite worrying that he's unable to kind of continue to step up like the rest of the drivers.
Just a Q1 merchant.
Q just goes, is one session, is it? Perfect, cool. Yeah. I'll wrap it up.
A Q1 and lap one merchant, and that's what he does.
Yeah, he's great on day one. You know, when you start a new job and everyone loves you, and then you're like, oh, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Just sit in the corner quietly.
You know, with Fernando Alonso, I just think he has like 2 race weekends per year, which are just naff. Like, Fernando Alonso is great, like 95-97% of the time. And he just has 1 or 2, 3 maximum weekends per year where just from the very off, he's just not on it. And this just seems to be one of them. I can't remember immediately what the races were last. Maybe the Spanish Grand Prix wasn't very good at last year, if you remember. And then also the Belgian Grand Prix. It just seems like once every like 8 or 9 races, he just has one. And it's like,
that man's tired. He's old.
Yeah. It's just it's recharging.
Yeah. I don't like this race. So I'm out.
I'm in harvest mode. I'll be back next week.
But it's always like, he's either like all completely on it, brilliant, or just like this. There's never really any in between with Fernando Alonso. I don't know. Even with, like you say, the sprint race itself, he didn't make any progress. To be honest, I think anyone outside of maybe the Red Bulls and possibly the Ferraris or Lando Norris would struggle to make it through at this track. I think it's pretty difficult to actually recover. You know, we didn't see the Mercedes. George Russell didn't really make any progress in the Merc in the sprint race. I have to admit, I don't think the Aston Martins are going to make much progress unless carnage ensues in front of them tomorrow. But yeah, tough weekend for Aston Martin. As you've said, just doesn't seem very hooked up with this track. Simple as that. A driver of that session, Sam?
Well, it's not Daniel Ricciardo, who decided that he could get out of Q1.
Swear to God, man.
He's done it to annoy you, Ben. He's done it to annoy you. And you know what? If I can't get 3 red flags, Daniel, I'm here for it, mate. You pooed around in 17th.
Just to clarify, this is relating to my bold prediction where I've said that both RB Minardi AlphaTauri drivers will score points in the main race. Now, of course, both drivers did score points in the sprint race. Mm. And I made very sure to specify the main race where, you know, 2 more positions are given points. And then Daniel Ricciardo is going to have to do a lot of work to get there tomorrow.
If that doesn't happen, this might be your 4th prediction this year where you're about a session out for getting something right.
Honestly, I am. It's not done yet, but fuming.
Maybe you should be my driver of the session for doing that. I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Max Verstappen. Just when you're struggling that much and the car's not on it, and you still pull out a 10th over everyone else. I think I'm starting to wonder how much better that Red Bull car is than the rest of the field, or if it is just Max Verstappen being ridiculous, an absolute monster. He makes the difference again today. It could easily have been a 1-2 for Ferrari and they could have been 3-4. So yeah, driver of the session.
Harry?
I'm going to give Nico Hülkenberg some love. I know he's just doing it all the time, but Hülkenberg for just being there again in Q3. He out-qualified Tsunoda. I think that actually that, despite what this afternoon / this evening showed, I think that Visa Cash App RB is actually a pretty decent car around there, and they did not utilize it enough. I know Tsunoda got into the top 10, but I don't think it's quicker than the Haas. So, yeah, I'll go for Hülkenberg.
Yeah, I would give both of those driver shout outs. Again, Nico Hülkenberg, it's just important not to completely normalize what he's doing. It's just, he's great in qualifying.
He's in a Haas. He's in a Haas. Let's not forget.
Yeah. He's in it and he just does it all the time. Both of those drivers deserve respect. I'll give a shout out to Pierre Gasly as well. He did a great lap in Q1.
Sausages!
Yep. Well done, Pierre. First time you've out-qualified Esteban Ocon all season. Enjoy it while it lasts. That was great.
Remember when Kubica beat Russell because of that one race and he was one teammate was? That's what's going to happen. And I can't wait.
It was a good effort from Pierre Gasly. I think he's been more on it this weekend. So a good starting position, at least for the Alpines in 12th and 13th. I'll give it to Charles Leclerc. Maybe he should just only do 3 laps in practice from now on, because apparently that's a recipe for him doing quite well. Just finishes second in the sprint race, finishes second in qualifying. Man had 3 laps of practice. So yeah, and he was right on it with Max Verstappen. There wasn't much to separate the two of them.
I've got a little conspiracy theory.
Go on.
I wonder if Carlos Sainz has signed the contract and now he can't be asked.
You think Carlos Sainz has signed a contract with someone else, therefore he can't be asked with Ferrari anymore?
I mean, I think he's just gone. I haven't got to put the ultimate performance in. Like, deal's done. So now he's like...
He qualified third. Like, it wasn't...
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying he's doing a bad job. He's just not smashing Leclerc out of the park anymore. It's just like, yeah, whatever.
It's interesting.
I ain't buying it.
Can someone buy it, please? I got you guys. Someone for actual money. I need the cash.
Right, I guess that will do it for today's review. Of course, we've got another one tomorrow, Sam.
We have another one tomorrow. And if you want even more action, then subscribe to our Patreon, because on the top tier, you get power rankings. And we'll be doing those the day after the Grand Prix, where we rate every single driver's performance. And often, there's quite a few disagreements. Someone might give someone a 4, someone might give someone 8. And then we have a little debate. Oh, it's a rhyme. That was good, wasn't it? You can follow us on social, Late Breaking F1. And if you want to get involved in the show for the race review, we do submissions where you guys can tell us your moment of the race. Join the Discord for that. Link to the description. You'll get a notification from us as the race ends, asking you to submit your moment of the race. You might just hear your gorgeous tones across this podcast. In the meantime, I've been Samuel Sage.
I've been Ben Hocking.
And I've been Harry Eade.
And remember, keep breaking late.
Oh, feed to the sticks.
Podcast Network.